May it please the court, my name is Mark Brookstein and I represent appellant Bernard Behr. The state concedes that the district court erred in dismissing Behr's petition on the grounds that it was successive under section 2244B. If there are no questions with respect to that issue, I will go on to my second issue. The state argues in the final two pages of its brief that the district court should be affirmed because Behr waived the constitutional argument upon which his petition was based by not addressing them in his opening brief. Behr did not, however, waive his constitutional claims because the Certificate of Appealability, the COA, only certified the issue of whether his petition was successive. And that was the only issue decided against Behr in the district court. The COA expressly referred to the procedural issue in the singular. The COA, however, does go on to say, additionally, to the extent required by Slack v. McDaniel, the parties should address Behr's constitutional claims. However, Slack doesn't require Behr to argue claims that were not decided against him. In Slack v. McDaniel, the Supreme Court set forth a two-part test that must be satisfied before a court may issue a certificate of appealability when the district court has dismissed a petition based only on procedural grounds and did not reach the underlying constitutional merits. Slack requires the two things be satisfied before a court can issue a COA. First, there has to be at least a debatable, valid, underlying constitutional claim. Second, it has to be debatable whether the district court was correct in its procedural ruling. Here, this court performed the analysis required under Slack, found that there was an underlying constitutional issue, and issued the COA accordingly. That underlying constitutional claim is the ticket that allows Behr to come into this court and appeal the procedural issue that was decided against him. However, he doesn't have to argue the underlying constitutional issue because it wasn't decided against him. He only has to have the ticket to argue the procedural issue. Indeed, in Slack, the court never even reached the merits because they had not been addressed below, and so they remanded in order to determine whether a COA should issue in the first instance. Here, this court already issued the COA, which necessarily means that there was an underlying constitutional issue. Therefore, this court may consider the procedural issue on appeal. The state cites the Anderson v. Litcher case in support of its argument that there was waiver. However, the COA in that case was very different from the one here. In that case, the COA specifically certified the two constitutional issues for appeal, whereas this COA only certified the one and then said to the extent required by Slack.
Why didn't you bring to the court's attention the fact that the Certificate of Appealability appeared to be defective? What the statute requires is not simply that the judge conclude that there's a substantial constitutional issue, but that the certificate identify that issue. And this certificate doesn't identify any substantial constitutional issue, so it's defective. Why didn't you bring the error to the court's attention? State should be prepared for this, too, because that's my big question for them. Even more important for them, they should have asked us to dismiss the appeal on the grounds that the Certificate of Appealability was defective. You didn't want that.
And
you probably wanted a good certificate
and that's
to
exactly
avoid the fight you're now in.
And that's the point, that whether the Certificate of Appealability was defective or not, I don't know if it was or not.
Well, it was defective. The statute says the Certificate of Appealability must identify the substantial constitutional issue. And Slack against McDaniel says, and then it can also identify an ancillary, a substantial statutory issue. This Certificate of Appealability, quite transparently, does not identify any constitutional issues, substantial or otherwise, so it's defective. And it could have been dismissed. One would have thought it was in your client's interest to immediately bring that to the court's attention, to avoid the risk that we would dismiss the certificate on the ground that it's defective.
Well, to the extent that the Certificate of Appealability was defective, it was the responsibility of the state to raise it in their brief.
Don't pass the buck. I mean, as I say, as soon as we noticed it was defective, one thing we could have done was just snap our fingers and dismiss it. And I don't think your client would have liked that. And therefore, one would think, in an effort to protect your client, you would have asked us to correct it,
well,
rather than take the risk that we would dismiss it. But the state was asleep at the switch, so that never happened. Your client was lucky.
And under Owens, the state thereby waived the opportunity to...
Well, forfeited. Forfeited, right.
Forfeited.
But one should not rely on one's opponent being somnolent.
Well, because the certificate... Essentially, I read the certificate of appealability that ordered me to brief the issue that it certified, and that's what I did. So I read the COA quite literally, did what I was told, and briefed it. And to the extent that the state should have objected, as you say, they have forfeited that opportunity. The state, the rule that the state seeks, that FLAP requires the petitioner to attack rulings that the district court did not make, would not make sense. First, because the constitutional issue wasn't addressed below at all, there would be an inadequate record upon which this court could conduct meaningful review, or upon which Beyer, the petitioner, could even craft his argument. He would have to imagine what the lower court would have ruled and then make arguments attacking these kind of ghost rulings. Second, the state's rule would transform this court into a district court and require this court to decide fact-intensive constitutional issues with an inadequate record. And the district court should not be allowed to simply dismiss petitions and then rely on this court to do the fact-finding function. So in conclusion, because the state conceded the only issue on this appeal, that the district court erred in dismissing Beyer's petition as successive, this court should reverse the district court and remand so that the district court can perform its fact-finding function and determine whether there's any underlying constitutional merit. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Brookstein. Mr. Weinstein?
Warren Weinstein, the Assistant Attorney General.
Well, Mr. Weinstein, you know what my question is. Why didn't the state draw to our attention the fact that the certificate does not comply with the statute?
Well, after Cage, I think I would, but I guess I was engaging in the fiction of judicial infallibility.
Look, ever since Congress enacted this statute, we have issued a long series of published opinions, now must be at least a dozen, pointing to defective certificates, inviting states to move to dismiss them, in two cases in published opinions, dismissing them on account of the defect, in some other cases reforming them, and adding, in cases like Marcello and Ramuno, that if the state doesn't do that until the briefing stage, it's too late. So there's this benefit that the state can have, but only if it acts before briefing. And you just did nothing.
We want a decision on the successive petition also, because we don't think it's in the state's interest for the district court's reasoning to stand.
Well, that's the district court's why it would be, to me, impractical to expect Mr. Brookstein, after there's a CA issued, for him to say, wait a minute, this is a defective CA.
Well, I agree. I would agree that it would be primarily our.
Indeed, if you wanted us to decide the statutory question, and I can see why you want us to do so, you should have thought it was in your interest to bring the defect to our attention. Because one thing that can now happen, indeed, what you've invited us to do in the brief, is essentially dismiss the appeal for want of prosecution. No opinion would be entered.
Question
that you think needs to be resolved would be left unresolved.
I would invite you to do the same thing the court did in Anderson, which is address the procedural issue and affirm on a different ground. And I guess the procedural posture in this case was strange because Mr. Beyer was not represented by counsel. The first time we participated in the case was when this court issued a show cause order on why the district court judgment shouldn't be summarily affirmed. Our response was to bring to the court's attention the question that the procedural question raised, and Judge Wood's response was to issue the certificate of appealability. And I agree with you that based on the prior law in this circuit and others, that it should have specifically stated a constitutional claim.
That's just what the statute says.
Right.
The statute says the certificate shall identify the substantial constitutional claim.
I agree.
You know, there lots of times statutes are ambiguous or tough to get through. This is short, to the point. Judges, I'm kind of puzzled at your adversary's reference to a presumption of judicial infallibility.
Well,
he is, after all, representing the appellant, coming to this court trying to explain that the district judge massacred this case, not one to embrace a presumption of judicial infallibility.
He was speaking.
Right. I was actually referring to the statement in Cage, directing.
Although district courts make mistakes, appellate judges never make mistakes.
Well.
And therefore, he would never file a petition for a writ of certiorari, no matter what we do. Is that the representation here? Oh, maybe no.
But in hindsight, you're absolutely right. The state should have filed a request to clarify or issue or amend the certificate of appealability. Of course, this court has done so on its own motion on a number of occasions also.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Weinstein. Mr. Lipstein, how much time does he have? Anything further?
When the certificate of appealability was issued, we did believe that the procedural issue certified was an important one. And for that reason, and because we assumed that the court had properly found an underlying constitutional issue under SLAC.
Yeah, but as you know, what the statute requires is not that the court find an underlying constitutional issue or believe that there is one, but that the certificate specifically identify that issue. I assume that some certificates identify issues even though the court hasn't really found them. Sometimes courts believe that there is, but don't identify them, and it's the latter that violates the statute.
Well, and that may be the case, that if it were defective, then it again goes back to the state. They should have argued that. But since we believe that the procedural issue was an important one and we have an underlying issue, we ask that this court address the procedural issue and reverse, since the state's already conceded it. So thank you very much, and have...
Okay, thank you, Mr. Berkley, and thank you also for, you know...